Sunset Lake CBD is a majority employee-owned hemp farm located right outside of Burlington, Vermont. Before they started growing hemp, Sunset Lake Farms produced cream for Ben & Jerry's. Sunset Lake CBD doesn't use any pesticides or herbicides to grow any of its hemp plants, and they use organic fertilizer and other sustainable farming techniques to ensure the long-term health of the soil and to minimize their carbon footprint. So like all of us, my days are really stressful. By the end of the night, my kids are in bed, I'm taking a minute to chill, but I'm still unwinding. I recently started using the Relax Gummies infused with CBD isolate, reishi mushroom extract, and ashwagandha root extract. I'm really glad I tried these because they really helped me get ready for a good night of sleep, and I really think I sleep better, so I'd highly recommend it. So check out Sunset Lake CBD today at sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. That's sunsetlakecbd.com and use the code HFPOD for 20% off your order. Farmer owned, Vermont grown, Sunset Lake CBD.
Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. Got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hey, listeners, I want to tell you about a sponsor, Music Masters Collective. They're a nonprofit organization that produces unique music events, providing opportunities for fans and artists to meet and collaborate in an inspired and creative atmosphere. Every week, they host different events, all with the opportunity to learn from world-class musicians like Oteil Burbridge, Trouble No More, former members of The Band, Milk Carton Kids, Nikki Glaspie, Bill Frisell, Sean Colvin, and many more. This June, join the Fab Four, Joan Osborne, John Sebastian, Marshall Crenshaw, and a great group of faculty for the debut of Magical Mystery Camp. This all-inclusive, once-in-a-lifetime music vacation experience in the heart of the Catskills will be packed with nightly performances, workshops, speakers, song circles, open mics, and a lot more. If you're a performing musician at any level, bring your instrument. If you're a music lover, bring your good spirit. It's an amazing experience for individuals, friends, and couples alike. Registration is open, spots are filling up, so check it out soon. And scholarships are available. Check out magicalmysterycamp.com/helpingfriendly to learn more.
Osiris.
All right. Happy Wednesday. Here from lovely Denver, Colorado. My name is Brian Brinkman. I am here solo for the time being. All my co-hosts have left me to go to Madison Square Garden to see Phish play this April New Year's Eve run in New York. And I couldn't be more excited for them. I'm here holding down the fort. I will be here all weekend. Today we have a really fun episode, a very holiday appropriate episode with one of my best friends, one of my favorite people to talk to about Phish. We're going to dive into that here shortly. That's Ben Greenfield coming on at Guy Forge OPT for all of you on Twitter. Ben and I are going to talk through the history of Makasupa Policemen. We may not. We're trying to figure out if it's possible. We may get a call in from one of the co-hosts, Megan or RJ, as they are approaching MSG and as they're getting ready for this show. So that could be fun if it happens. But we are going to be talking Makasupa Policemen today. And then the next 4 days, we're going to be coming live. Different time, 1 p.m. Eastern, with some people who are at the shows in New York City this weekend to break down the run, talk through kind of exactly what happened on Phish's end, what music was played, what were the big jams, what were the big bust outs, crazy moments, what was it like for people there to be in the room. Like, I get this feeling, you know, Phish obviously played an incredible summer and fall tour last year. They played the Mexico run here in February, but there's this weird lingering vibe of, like almost Hampton 09 sense that I get of like, what is it going to be like when the lights drop in the garden? It just feels like another level and another aspect of this whole return to quote unquote normalcy. So really, really excited for all of that. Excited to dive into it. And of course, excited to webcast these shows and take them all in. Today, though, like I said, we're going to be joined here in a second by Ben Greenfield, fantastic thinker, fantastic person, fantastic just overall mind when it comes to fish and other topics as well. But we are here to talk about fish. Before we do that, though, just a couple quick bits of business. I want to encourage everyone out there to once again subscribe to Osiris Media on Apple Podcasts. You get HF Pod, Undermine Premium, a whole bunch of other premium shows from Osiris, bonus episodes, ad-free content. The best thing about it is it's a great, great, great way to support what we do here at Osiris Media. If you like what we do, if you like us coming live to you on a regular basis, and we have more shows that are going to be coming to do this in the coming weeks and months. But if you like this, supporting Osiris Media is a great way to continue doing that. I also, for the purposes of today, I want to tell you about, we have two fantastic sponsors today. I want to tell you about the bar at Moynihan. This is located at the Moynihan Train Hall right next to MSG. You can check them out for your pre and post show hub ahead of Fish at MSG. And Osiris Media, members from Osiris Media are going to be there tomorrow, April 21st, around 5:30 in the evening. So just about 25 hours from now for a cool little meet and greet. They want to meet listeners of their shows, fans of HF Pod, Undermine, Sugar Maple, No Simple Road, Comes a Time, 36 from the Vault. The list is ongoing. If you listen to any Osiris shows, go to the bar at Moynihan, right next to MSG in the Moynihan Train Hall at 5:30 p.m. tomorrow for a great Osiris meet and greet. The bar at Moynihan will have exclusive Sierra Nevada's foam pilsner available. They will also have a discounted price only at the new bar at Moynihan by the original Penzi team. Many of you MSG concert goers will remember the Penzi from the pre-COVID days. Fish Week at MSG, the bar at Moynihan. It's a pint's throw from MSG, situated inside the new Moynihan Train Hall. Hop off the Amtrak, the Long Island Rail, or the subway, grab a few before and after the show. You can head over to the moynihanbar.com or follow at the bar at Moynihan for more details. So check them out. We will be talking about them all week here. Fantastic bar that is setting up some great stuff for people ahead of and after MSG shows. We are also, as always, sponsored by Sunset Lake CBD. Sunset Lake CBD's line of smokable hemp products are for the old deadhead or the young fish fan searching for a mellow body high. Smoking CBD has all the benefits of high THC cannabis without the paranoia or the anxious side effects. With 9 different strains from this year's harvest, there's something for everyone. Hawaiian Haze is awesome for an outdoor show. Cherry Abacus is best for the end of the night. It's a great little balance between the two of them. All the flowers grown, cured, and trimmed by Sunset Lake CBD farmers. Even better, Sunset Lake CBD's farm-to-table approach gets you great pricing on premium CBD flower by shipping directly from their farm to your door. I've talked about Sunset Lake for months now on HF Pod, and I cannot tell you enough how much I love their products. Incredible, incredible stuff. I just got a new package of stuff, including the Hawaiian Haze, which I enjoyed last night outside. It's beautiful weather here. I was listening to some music, hanging out outside, and just like took the edge off. It was the perfect, perfect thing at the end of the night. I was able to still cook dinner. It was amazing. So check them out today, sunsetlakecbd.com, and use the coupon code HFPOD for 20% off all products. Sunset Lake CBD, farmer owned and Vermont grown. And with that, we're going to bring on the intellectually tinged, the sometimes humorous, the fantastic guitarist, the excellent co-pilot at 1 o'clock in the morning when you are driving home from Chula Vista and you are just like exhausted and you need someone to keep you awake. excellent father also, by the way. And I just picked that up from his text to me about how great of a dad he is. But, you know, we'll let you all be the judge of that. Mr. Ben Greenfield.
Hey, Brian, thank you for all those compliments. You can keep going. I don't want to cut you off at all.
I got nothing left. That was it. I utilized every single compliment I have.
Wow. Thank you. I like sometimes humorous was a really nice one. I mean, sometimes humorous implies usually boring or usually unfunny.
Yeah, typically tries to, no, you're always funny. You have a sense of humor that is in line with, I think, the best kind of sense of humor, because it's so dry. Like I will be in a conversation. You'll say something. I'll have almost like the perfect earnest reply. And then I'm like, wait, Ben is joking. And that's what I really like. It's the wait moment.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to discuss some moments of dry and wet humor in fish history with you today.
One would say that this humor is dank.
Mm.
You it's know,
appropriate adjective. It also has been known to make people moist,
and you know, it's the cush humor is what we're looking for here today.
Mm-hmm. The OG you shit.
Know. The OG shit. We are talking about a song that you really only can talk about today. And that is Maki Supa Policeman, the original fish song. We are going to dive into this. I've been thinking about this for a couple of months now, and I felt like there was nobody better suited to talk about this than you, Ben, because this is your favorite day of the year. This is your favorite fish song, aside from Jennifer Dances. You know, this perfectly aligns for us to do a deep dive into a song that I think we both think is much more interesting after doing all this research than we did going in. Am I wrong about that? Anything I just said, was I wrong about?
No, nothing at all, except that my favorite day of the year is 6ix9ine. But that aside, yeah, you know, Maki Supa Policeman is a fascinating and strange little unique number in fish lore. And I think I have really come to appreciate its historical significance for fish as part of this listening project. But I guess we'll get into all that.
We will. Before we get into all that, though, we want to do a quick diversion because, you know, Ben is the only... Well, I shouldn't say only, because there's one other person, but Ben is one of two people who, when I'm hanging out with, can tell me of all people that I'm playing too much fish, which you did on a wonderful drive between Phoenix and Chula Vista this past October, just about 6 months ago, which is crazy. But you were telling me before we jumped on today, you have a really exciting show that you're going to tonight. Can you tell us? It's not fish. Can you tell us, tell the listeners what you're going to see?
Yeah. So this fan's choice for what to see tonight is Taper's Choice. For those who are not familiar with Taper's Choice is the next great American jam band. Taper's Choice is a super group of sorts. It's comprised of Dave Harrington, the guitarist wunderkind from Dark Side, among other projects. There's the Taper's Choice cassette.
I have the Taper's Choice tape.
So Dave Harrington, extraordinary guitarist, Zach Tenorio Miller, who is just an absolute mad scientist on the keys, who I just became familiar with through this project. Alex Bleeker from Real Estate on bass, who's very deep into jam bands as well. And then Chris Thompson, an old college buddy of mine from Vampire Weekend, on drums. And, you know, I saw their first show that they played a few months ago, and I went into it. I was sort of assuming, like, okay, this is going to be fun. They'll probably have some good jamming. But what I discovered is, number one, they brought some killer compositions to the table, and they really, really, really nailed them. Number two, they really can jam. They're incredible musicians. Like, usually when you get a new jam band on the scene, they're people who don't have that much stage experience. These guys are all seasoned, incredible musicians. And number three, they really have a great sense of humor. And they sort of like toe the line sometimes. If you follow them on social media, you know this. They toe the line between like earnest jam band and jam band parody. And they do it really well. And it's like fun to follow them, fun to see them live. And I'm really excited to see them again tonight.
Yeah, I was listening to the show, I believe, that you saw from a couple months ago. It's the only show of theirs that's up on re-listen. And the track Donor Rap really, really gets me. Just incredible jamming in there. There's a lot of choices that are made improvisationally in their jams that they just don't feel in line with what you would expect a jam band to do. You know, there's usually that moment where like, We're building, like we're in a groove, and then we build towards a peak. And one of the things I love is the left turns that they tend to make, where there's a peak coming, but instead we're gonna mess with the rhythm. We're gonna go into a different space here, and you get, you know, Chris Thompson's drums are some of the best in indie rock, and applying that to a jam band is something, you know. Vampire Weekend has like experimented in the last 4 or 5 years with like subtle hints at jamming. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like contained exploration. It's the way that almost like My Morning Jacket would jam in most songs, where like it's expanded to 9 to 10 minutes, where it's usually a 3 or 4 minute song on record, but it's not really jamming in the sense that we're used to with Fish. He's able to be let loose in this band in a really cool way.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. And he also, I mean, he is so well versed in Fish. And so this is true of all of those guys. Like, I think they have, you know, the ears for jam music. And yet I think because their own playing experience comes from other improvisational and non-improvisational backgrounds, they just, like you're saying, they have just a different set of vocabularies and different set of instincts when it comes to jamming that leads to some really, really unique directions that you don't typically hear from, you know, your kind of standard local jam band.
Yeah, absolutely. It's exciting stuff, and they're playing on Sunday following the MSG run. So anyone who's in New York City who wants to see more music, really exciting jam music, go and see Taper's Choice. Do you know the venue they're playing? I'm blanking out off the top of my head.
I want to say it's like the Sultan Room. Am I making that up?
I think you're right about that. That sounds right. I'm going to look it up really quickly while we're talking about this, because while we were planning for this show, I was thinking about, it turns out that it's another great musician who also dabbles in improvisational music. It's another great musician's birthday who I happened to see last Thursday, and that is Mr. Steve Gunn. That's the most recent concert that I've seen. You saw Steve and Jeff Parker about a month ago. Is that correct?
Yeah. They were doing a co-headlining tour, and they played 3 nights in LA. I saw the final night. Where Jeff Parker had like Micaiah McRaven on drums, who I'd never seen live. And both acts really just blew me away. Just such incredible musicianship and improvisational prowess and songwriting prowess.
Yeah, I had never seen Steve Gunn before. I've been listening to him since 2014's Way Out Weather, and it was a solo show, and I was... Anyone out there who's looking for new music, who's looking for an artist that kind of toes the line between singer-songwriter, indie rock, and jam music, Steve Gunn's just going to see him live, even in a solo setting, is absolutely incredible. He did a ton of experimentation from a pedal standpoint while playing just acoustic guitar. Every one of his songs had like a 6 to 7 minute instrumental gap in the middle of it that was absolutely just breathtaking. He ended it with a 12 minute version of Way Out Weather, the title track from his 2014 record. And it was in this tiny little room, Globe Hall, here in Denver, Colorado, my favorite venue in the city. just an amazing show. I went in kind of not knowing what I was getting out of it after listening to him for almost a decade now, and you know, hearing various styles of what he can do, both just with the acoustic guitar as well as with a full band, as well as with his duo, the Gunn Truszynski duo. And this felt kind of like a fusion between his most recent record, Other You, and his Gunn Truszynski records that I'm a huge fan of. So it was a killer show. And you know, the more jamming that we're getting out of indie rock artists, the better for me. It's a really good thing.
Yeah. It's cool. I don't think that there used to be such like a spectrum between like jam bands and indie rock. There were two islands, and it feels like they are getting connected in really interesting ways more and more with each passing month. And he's amazing. I mean, like everything he does, like you're saying, he just has so much talent that, you know, if he's just kind of playing a 3-minute song or is in a pure improvisational setting, it's always going to be great.
Yeah, I've been in a big guitar kick of late, and watching him play the acoustic guitar and watching him just like build these soundscapes, I was just like, okay, there's a long way to go, but there's also like so much more that I can do with this guitar. And I snapped a couple pictures of his pedal board, and I was like, I'm gonna add a few of these to the ensemble, because I feel like I need to take that dive into pedals with the acoustic.
Yeah. Not too many people can improvise on the acoustic like he can.
No, it's really impressive stuff. You were absolutely right. I just pulled it up. The Taper's Choice is playing on Sunday, 4/24, at the Sultan Room on the rooftop. The show is sold out, so our promotion has done nothing. Maybe we sold the last ticket. Who knows? But if you are interested in what we're talking about here, check them out on Relisten. Taper's Choice again: Dave Harrington, Alex Bleeker, Chris Thompson, Zach Tenero Miller, as well as special guests. Really, really amazing lineup there. Also, if you're looking for some sort of if you're looking for music ahead of Phish on Saturday, the 23rd, they're doing a live stream from the Relic Studio. So I'm going to have to check that out. That'll be incredible. That said, we're going to do a hard segue, a hard left turn here into our main segment of the show, which is Makisupa Policeman. And before we dive into the origins of Makisupa Policeman, Ben, tell me, what is your impression of Makisupa Policeman? Do you remember the first time you heard this song? Do you have, like, how has the song evolved for you in Phish's larger canon?
Okay, so the first time I heard it, I'm 99% sure, was at my, did they play it at my first show? I think they might have, 12/28/96, do you recall? They definitely played it at my second show, which was 12/2/97. But I definitely first heard it live. And I think like for most people in most settings, when you're hearing Makisupa, it's like, you know, it's kind of like a tongue in cheek little reggae number that usually lasts for 4 or 5 minutes. And it's usually, you know, kind of like a breather in the second set that's not a ballad. But then once in a while, it's something very different. And like, I think one of the cool things about, you know, following Phish for a long time and like seeing so many different versions of a song, like you see like the different colors it can take. And I think for Makisupa, if you're really lucky, that means like a jam that doesn't sound anything like any other jams. And then maybe a little bit more commonly, it's just something like a kind of joke that ends up being like the theme of the show or the weekend. Like, I think we'll talk about a couple versions like that, but like 11/1/13 comes to mind, the Kush Bush thing, where it's just like, okay, that's our new joke, and we're gonna ride that for like 3 nights or longer. But what about you?
Well, you're absolutely right. Your first version was your first show, 12/28/96. It's a great version that has the keywords.
Oh, stink, right, stink, stank, stank,
stunk.
Yeah, one of the best keywords ever.
One of the best. My earliest memories of this song, I think the first time I heard it was when I got Live Phish 1, which was 12/14/95, which is the keyword Gaddafi in my bed, which taught me two things. One, that there was a Phish song called Makisupa Policeman that sounded like a and I mean this in the kindest and sweetest and most loving way possible, a cheap ripoff of a reggae tune. And number two, it made me realize that Muammar Gaddafi was something of a pop cultural icon in a strange and twisted manner. And, you know, I like to say that that's, you know, kind of the origins of my interest in the Middle East. It's probably not, but, you know, that was like, I have this like very vivid memory of hearing that and then jumping on the internet and being like, who the hell is this guy Gaddafi? And, you know, starting to go down that rabbit hole. But I remember hearing the song for the first time and just kind of thinking like, I love the fact that Phish has these songs. You know, if you listen, if you think about like Live Phish 01 as just an example, there's songs like Tila and Split Open and Melt and Haley's Comet and Foam on that volume. But then to have like a song like Nikasupa Policeman that's just kind of like thrown in there, and it's just this breath of fresh air, and it's kind of this joke moment. I don't know, it adds something to their overall catalog. It allows this vulnerability. It allows this kind of comedic relief in a way that you just don't expect with a lot of large rock shows. Like most comedic moments at a rock show is really heavily planned and really like it's perfectly constructed to, you know, usually prevent any humor from getting through, but also to prevent anyone from being offended or anything like, you know, happening in a manner that goes haywire, goes off the, you know, off the rails. It feels even today, like every time they play Nikasupa Policeman, not necessarily that anything can happen, but that the band is kind of just like riffing and it's like a picture into who they are backstage in some manner.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, it's also like a window back in time for Phish. Like it's such an 80s Phish song. Yeah. And one, I think one of the things that's amazing is the fact that it's still in their catalog. Like if you think about some of the songs that they wrote, the silly songs that they would play in the 80s, or the tongue in cheek songs that they would play. Most of them didn't really make it into the 90s.
Totally.
And certainly not beyond that. And Makisupa somehow did. And it's, you know, it's like you're saying, I mean, I think a lot of bands, like as they grow, they're like, okay, we got to put on our big kid hats now. Phish sort of did, but they still got some stupid shit in their quiver.
It's interesting. Cause like, I'd never thought about it this way, but the way you just mentioned it made me kind of rethink it on the fly. Like it's not complex enough, like a clod or a bundle of joy that will then be put into a different song. Like, I don't know how they would take the section, like the buh, 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 duh, buh, buh, and like put that into a song where if you're a Phish fan and you know, this alternate history of 1998 and you hear a composition and you know, you're learning about the band, you're like, oh, that came from this little reggae song, Nikasupa Policeman. It's kind of just like simple enough that you keep it as its own thing. But at the same time, it is very college jokey and it is still, you know, it leans in a way that a lot of Phish songs don't, to stereotypes around the band, you know, that, you know, there's a stoner legacy to the fan base. And there's, you know, we're going to take little bits and pieces of music that we may not necessarily know a lot about from, you know, our cultural upbringings, but we're just going to kind of incorporate it because we've listened to this music before and why not? It's kind of fun sometimes to play reggae music.
Right. Yeah. It's funny. You and I were texting a couple of days ago and I posed the question, like, what are the greatest weed related moments in Phish history that don't come from Makisupa? And there were like surprisingly few that we could come up with. It's kind of like, yeah, if they want to make like some drug jokes, some weed jokes, they're going to pretty much just play Makisupa and that's going to be like, you know, their hall pass to talk about weed.
And even today, you know, even when like sobriety is such a huge part of Phish, like there's still this kind of like wink of, hey, we can smell what's coming from the crowd. We know what's happening. We know it's a part of this. I remember from our text exchange, we talked about The Simpsons. We talked about Legalize It from Dick's 2014, which celebrated the looming legalization of marijuana in Colorado. Mm-hmm. What else did we have on that list?
There's the Amsterdam 96 train wreck where the band is like incredibly blazed. And I think like at one point, Trey takes a bong hit from somebody in the audience. And it's bad.
It's that show sounds like what would happen if you tried to play really complex music when you were stoned. And it's interesting because, you know, we talked about this when we did an episode on Amsterdam 97, the 2/17/97 show a couple months ago. And it's only 7 months later. And it like leans into aspects of Amsterdam in such a better, like it leans into the creativity and the darkness and the kind of avant-garde nature to culture in Amsterdam. And like this abstract, anything is possible that you get from European art rather than, you know, some aspects of like American rock. And just 7 months earlier, it was like, we just don't know how to play Amsterdam. Like, we're professional musicians. We just played December 31st, 1995, and we don't know how to play in Amsterdam. Quick bit about Macis Supa's history. So you mentioned this was a song from the 80s, which is partially true. This debuted early on in Phish's career, which we'll talk about here in a second. But this is Phish's only song from the 60s. This is their one 60s classic. It was written in 1969 by Tom Marshall, penned in elementary school. It is the first Phish original song that was put on tape. Keywords to the song are key, as we're going to talk about here over the course of this episode. And as we noted, it's perhaps the most tongue-in-cheek admission of marijuana usage in Phish lyrics. Macis Supa Policeman, the name comes from Tom gave the name Macis Supa Policeman to any of his older sister's cool boyfriends. Years later, when Trey heard this, he misheard Macis Supa as Macis Supa, and thus the title was born. It means nothing other than, hey, you're a cool dude. I want to read something really quickly from Phish.net. There's an excellent history of Macis Supa Policeman that also appears in the Phish Companion, the newest volume. The appearance of Macis Supa in a set generally seems to be a sign of good things to come or an exclamation point to an already impressive musical passage, something which we are going to highlight and which Ben noted a couple of minutes ago. It's a rare tune throughout much of its existence. It's only been played 113 times, and I think it's actually less than that because some of the performances in Phish.net are like when it bookends another song. Macis Supa has received heightened attention throughout 1995. The band dusted it off in that year 9 times, utilizing it on a handful of occasions as something to segue into after some exhaustive jamming. Several very excellent jams have drifted into Macis Supa, including the 5/7/94 Tweezer, the 7/2/95 Runaway Jim, the 11/30/95 Tweezer, and the 11/19/97 Wolfman's Brother. In its more recent incarnation, Macis Supa has more often than not served as a set opener, having been tapped for that duty in about half of its appearances dating back to 12/8/94, sometimes in very high-profile situations, such as on 12/29/95, 8/16/96, 12/28/96, and 8/16/97. The show opening 8/16/97 version famously segued into the completion of the Harpua that was left unfinished a year before at the Clifford Ball. All that you can read and more on Phishnet as well as in the Phish Companion, but it really kind of summarizes my fascination with the song after we decided to start talking about this. Because I think, you know, when I threw this idea out to you, we were both kind of like, it's 420. Ha ha ha, we're going to talk about Phish's pot song. But we learned a lot coming out of this research period, and we're going to share some fantastic versions here for you all. Just a couple quick notes before we jump into the notable versions. I said it's been played 113 times. There's 36 However, jam chart entries, which is pretty high for a song like this, it debuted on 10/23/84, but the first tape is from 12/1/84, which we'll talk about here in a sec. The last version that we heard was 10/26/21, and it's had three notable gaps. 60 shows from November 1st, 2013 to August 7th, 2015. 109 shows from February 25th, 1990 to November 26th, 1990. Crazy to think 100 shows could happen within the same year. And 322 shows, the biggest gap in its history, from November 26th, 1990 to April 29th, 1993. And since April 29th, 1993, it's more or less been in an extended rotation. Big enough gaps that when it's played, it feels special. Short enough gaps that never really feels like a true bust out. Did I miss anything there in the overview?
I think you're good.
Well, let's jump into some notable versions. So we wanted to kind of go through what we think is kind of the extensive, exhaustive list of Macasupas, and we're going to share some of our favorites as well. But we kind of wanted to break this into a couple tiers. We have the 80s shows, and there's some really fascinating versions from the 80s. The 1.0, like the big 1.0 shows from the mid 90s. And then the kind of how Macasupa has evolved in the 2.0 period. So looking at the 80s, Ben, what are some of the notable versions that you can think of from the 80s for Macasupa Policeman? What are your thoughts on it during that period?
Yes. Well, so you mentioned the 12/1/84 version that comes out of Fire on the Mountain. So at that point, you've still got Jeff in the band. It's a very different thing. Check it out for historical reasons. But then in 87, it really kind of flourishes. And you have a bunch of really extended Macasupas that go, you know, 10 minutes or so. And it was sort of the vehicle for if they were going to do a jam that was kind of like mellow, spacey, and, you know, where they could use what Trey could use whatever pedals he had. Fishman, too. There's like a bunch of reverb on his drums. They're really trying to make it sound, give it like a, you know, a summery reggae vibe. So 8/21/87 is one of the longest versions. There's a 16-minute version of Steer It Up, the Bob Marley song, into Macasupa, and then they go into a jam before going into David Bowie. It's interesting. There's some rapping. There's some somewhat cringy, potentially offensive stuff in there. I would recommend more highly the version from the following week, 8/29/87, the 11-minute version, which includes an incredible guitar solo from Trey, as well as the following month, you got 9/21. So you kind of can't go wrong in 1987 with Macasupa.
No, and, you know, I developed this like deep fascination with 1987 and 88 Fish, because by 1987, the quartet is formed. Paige has been in the band for 2 years. A lot of the big songs, like the big early songs, pre-Nectars, pre-Picture of Nectars release, have been written. So a lot of songs that are going to go on Junta, a lot of songs that are going to be in The Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday. A lot of just like classic Fish songs were written throughout 1986 and 87. Songs like Fluffhead are starting to figure out a way to come together. And it's also this really just gorgeous period for jamming. And there's so much jamming that happens in 87 and 88. It's before they really focused on tightening things up, really crafting this diverse, almost recital type of set list that they would perform around the country for basically 4 years from 89 to 93, before they started to expand out again, once they felt like they were really comfortable with the fan base that they had created nationally. But 87, 88, they're kind of just this like secret Vermont band. They're still kind of like, in quotes, a college band. You don't know how seriously things are being taken. There's no like true touring cycle. It's here's four shows at Nectar's, and then here's a show at the ranch, and we're going to play like a, in quotes, festival at Ian's farm. But, you know, it's going to be attended by 150 of our friends and friends of friends and so on and so forth. But yeah, you were absolutely right that 8/21, 8/29, 9/21, these are just stunningly beautiful versions. Like Trey sounds Whereas in other parts of the 80s, his speed and his accuracy is really what drives so much of the, you know, like when you hear him play like Light Up or Leave Me Alone or Funky Bitch, like you hear him play in a manner that you're like, a college guitarist is playing like this. I almost think it's more impressive that you hear him in these versions play almost nothing. And it's like Fish is channeling where they would go a decade from then in some ways.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I had the same reaction listening through these, that it was like, if it weren't for this, like maybe we would not have like the Waves jams, you know, or like What's the Use or some of the kind of more spacey stuff that they would get to later. It's just like, this was an outlet for like ethereal jamming. I was kind of like thankful that they just had this launch pad for that.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting in the Fish book, Fishman talks a lot about, cause that was, you know, that comes out of interviews the band did in 1997, and Fishman talks a lot about reggae, and he talks a lot about trying to, drum within like a reggae type of beat, because it allows so much space and it keeps everyone within time, within rhythm, but allows Paige and Mike especially to really showcase what they can do while Trey is kind of experimenting and overhead and just like developing a melody, but like he's not doing too much. And it's so wild to go back in time and hear them already playing like this on a more than likely subconscious level. You know, they're probably, I would be shocked to hear them already having ideas about what 1997 would be back in the Vermont days of the 80s. But it's wild for me to hear these versions and to think like, A, there's an alternate history for what Makasupa could have been for their entire career, where it could have been a jam vehicle for the whole career, but B, also kind of the foresight that the band seemed to have at the time.
Mm-hmm.
Jumping ahead. So we have two versions from the mid 90s and then three versions from the late 90s. And they both kind of showcase the similarities and differences of where the band's approach would be with Makasupa in the mid 90s and the late 90s. Let's focus first on the version we have from 94, 95. What do we have for people?
Yeah, we've got, so 1029, 94, it's about the full sequence. So I believe this is coming out of Split Open and Melt. Get at near the end of the first set, you get Buffalo Bill into Makisupa into Rift. And Makisupa in so many of these versions is part of like a larger suite as it is here. And then on 7295, it comes out of this crazy runaway gym. And you just get a big spacey jam out of Makisupa, which kind of fits into the summer 95 feel.
Yeah, it kind of gives us this two sides of the song. You know, on the one hand, we have 1029-94, which showcases kind of this, it's going to be inserted in a humorous type of manner, and it's going to showcase kind of, you know, the jokester, prankster side. This is obviously one of those shows that it's a night before the night type of show. You know, it allows the band the opportunity to lean into some joking and lean into some humor. But then you get this version from 95, the Sugar Bush shows, where, you know, the band is playing this crazy long runaway gym that opens up that second set and then falls into Makasupa. And it gives you both jokes, but it also gives you this ability for like further extended jamming, kind of like what you saw in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
What were your thoughts on these? Do you have like a preference?
You know, I loved listening to the ones from the 80s. My favorite Makisupas are really, as my favorite almost everything is the late 90s versions. It just felt like it was kind of in the later part of the 90s where their ability to you know, craft an interesting space jam that's not just sort of like, you know, a bunch of noise, where they really came into their own with that kind of jamming.
Well, and that's true. And I mean, so we have three versions that we wanted to talk about from the late 90s, because these two versions from the mid 90s kind of showcase the two divergent halves of like where Makasupa is going to go. It's either going to be inserted as kind of a joke. I think a I don't know if it's a great example, but it's a proper example of one of the last times we heard the song was Deer Creek 2021. Trey, you know, takes that set off into like this just mashup territory, and every song is kind of woven into each other. And then of course Makasupa, you know, comes somewhere in the middle of the set. And that's kind of what you get here in the 10/29/94 version. But the three versions that we highlighted from the late 90s are more in the vein of what you're talking about here from 7/2/95. We have 7/25/97, which is kind of two things at once. It is both a segmented jam, but it's also an incredible jam. It's an incredible jam segment, and it kind of adds to the lore of Summer 97. You get this just stunning bathtub gym, 20-21 minutes, just drenched in sweat. This is from either Austin or Dallas. I can't remember exactly. Dallas. Okay. Gin into Makasupa into AC/DC bag. And it's a direct segue into AC/DC bag. This is one of my favorite jam segments the band has ever played. I remember hearing this for the first time on the From the Archives leading into Magna Ball, and just being, you know, the beauty of the From the Archives is Kevin's playing jams and not telling you what it is until after it happens. And I'd never heard this before. And it's like, oh my God, this bathtub gin, this is incredible. And then it somehow goes to Makasupa, goes into AC/DC bag. Later that year, 11/19/97, I wrote in our notes, just all caps, just space. I mean, like there's just nothing happening in the middle part of this jam. It's beautiful. And it really sounds like for whatever they were doing that was great in the summer of 87, this sounds like a band that knows how to play nothing and make nothing sound great. And then 7/25/99 from Deer Creek, which bookends Happy Birthday to Chris Carotta. What were your thoughts on these versions? I know that we both have some favorites in these.
Yeah. Well, like our mid-90s choices, there's a lot of variety in here. So 7/25/97, it does have kind of like, you know, a beautiful spacey jam in the middle. But then after they sing the final verse of Makisupa, they go into like kind of a rockin' jam. Like it almost sounds like they could go into Moby Dick.
Yes.
Which is like so atypical for Makisupa. And it's really cool to hear that. But yeah, with 11/19/97, like you're saying, it's just like the bottom drops out. I was listening to it this morning in the car. My 2-year-old was in the car and she said, "Alexa, play the next song." she thought it was over. And I was like, no. They're going to play more.
Nope. Just nope. You wait. We got more.
It's sick. She didn't say that sick, but she did say the part about Alexa. But yeah, one of the things I love,
I feel like your daughter would appreciate this.
Oh yeah. Oh, sorry. Alexa thinks I'm talking to her right now. but the fact there's such direction to the Space Jam. It's not just sort of like, whoa, you know, it's like they actually, it builds tension, and then the tension resolves by going back into the second verse. Totally unique jam in that respect. And then the Deer Creek 99 one is it's all about shenanigans and happy birthdays to Chris. Hold on, I'm gonna have to mute so I can turn off Alexa.
You're okay. We're gonna take a pause. Actually, we have a very special appearance that is coming on here from co-host of HF Pod. Megan is hanging out pre-show, and we're going to bring her on for a second to check the vibes pre-show of MSG, the return of Fish to MSG for the first time since 2019. Megan, how are you?
Hey guys. Hey Brian. Hey Ben. Can you hear me? Okay?
We can hear you. How are you?
Oh my God, guys. I'm off the charts. I've been like a kid on Christmas morning all day. I couldn't sleep last night. My stomach was like flipping over all night, and I was sitting there like trying to regulate my heartbeat all night, but I still have all the energy today. It's just, it's Trey Day.
It's Trey Day. It's your first show at MSG since 2019. It's your first Fish shows since Hershey of last summer. Atlantic City, excuse me. Give me a song that you're hoping to hear.
Slow Llama.
Ben and I heard a Slow Llama last fall. It's a fun one to hear.
I've never heard one.
What where are you at right now?
So we're at the Kimpton Bar on 30th and 6th. Yeah, and we're just having some food, and then we're going to go meet some friends closer to MSG. And yeah, it's great. My friend flew in from North Carolina. My other friend's here from Brooklyn. And there she is.
Hey.
And we're just, like, so excited. I wish you guys were here.
Likewise. So you guys, have you seen any other Phish fans yet? Is there like tension building around like near the arena? Where are you guys like what are you guys seeing?
Yeah, there's lots of people around. It's super fun. Like kind of every like third person you see has some sort of like Phish stuff on, which is just like best. Yeah, we got off the subway at like probably like 3:15. I came from work, like dismissed my students and like rolled out, like wheels up, like, there's your moms. Okay, I'm out. And just like rolling my bag. I told them, I'm like, remember, I don't know if I told you guys, but I was supposed to see some Phish shows over the holidays and they got canceled. Like, let me know if something you wanted to go to got canceled over the holidays. And they're like, yeah, me. I'm like, yep. I'm like, well, they're happening now. So teacher's out for the next few days. And they were like, sweet. They're like, yay. And then I was like, I'm not going to be here tomorrow. They're like, boo. But they're psyched
Teacher's going to outer space for the next couple of days.
So yeah, exactly. I'm getting on my round room spaceship and I'm taking off.
I love it. Well, I mean, you look like you're beaming. You look like you're just like levitating right now. And we wish you guys nothing but the best for the show tonight. We will both be watching. Well, I know I will be watching. Ben, I think you have a concert tonight, but you'll probably be listening.
Yeah, no, I'll hear some stuff, and I'll be crossing my fingers for your slow llama.
Thanks. That would be quite the thing. Yeah, I'm so excited to recap with you tomorrow, Brian.
We will be hanging out tomorrow, 1 p.m. It's going to be great. And safe travels getting in. Have an awesome time tonight.
Have fun.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you, Ben. I'll see you tomorrow, too. Ryan.
See ya. All right. So we got the vibes for MSG. It is happening. It's like actually happening. You know what I mean? It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. No, it's really exciting.
So let's transition to talk about 2.0, 3.0 versions of Makasupa as we're going through kind of our all extensive list here. I think, you know, thematically, one of the things that we've talked about here is there's like two angles of how the band approaches Makasupa. On the one end, we get these extensive jams, like from the late 80s, as well as like 11/19/97, 7/25/97. On the other side, we get these joke prankster type of versions. You could argue that the 87 versions are both joke prankster and also these extended jams, but 10/29/94, 7/25/99, these are versions that like really lean into the humor. I think one thing that we've noticed and we'll dot our list here for the 2.0 and 3.0 versions are how much joking becomes a huge part of it. That like, if there's a moment for, you know, comedic relief that the band needs, they go to Makasupa Policeman. It kind of elevates where the show's at, but also gives us, to something you said earlier, a joke that's going to sustain throughout the night, throughout the run, and in some cases, in one of the cases, throughout the tour. So why don't you throw out three versions here, and we'll kind of take these in threes.
Yeah, so from 2.0, we've got 7/17/03, which is Bonner Springs, Kansas. So this is a version that includes some references to their head of security being arrested. Didn't get into why.
But of all the people to be arrested.
No, I know. There's a great irony to it. I actually went to PT in search of answers yesterday, and I couldn't figure out exactly what happened. But and then Trey teases Dust in the Wind later in the version. It's a Kansas show, Kansas song. And then he offers a date with Fishman to anybody who can name the tease, which seems pretty easy. But I guess Fishman got a lot of dates out of that. And then 12/30/03, Miami, New Year's run. They used Makisupa to lead into and I believe out of the like 30-minute guest appearance from Parliament Funkadelic, which is, man. Yeah, so some interesting versions there. And then our first 3.0 version is 8/8/09 from the Gorge. and Gorge, right?
The Gorge.
And yeah, and so Makisupa there comes immediately out of rock and roll, which I think you could make a pretty strong case that was the best jam of 2009, best jam of 3.0 to that point. And then they go into Makisupa, and Mike and Trey trade instruments. And yeah, I will just say that Trey is the strongest guitarist in Phish. And I'll go with that.
It's funny that 7-17-03 version, my second Phish show was 7-18-03. And this was back in the days with no smartphones, but I was, you know, checking the set list on a night to night basis. I was super excited. I remember seeing that little gimmick and then going to 7-18-03, and they announced the winner during I Didn't Know. And I think it's a guy named Dan. And Trey tells the crowd to put on earmuffs because the only person who can hear Fishman do Dust in the Wind on Vacuum is Dan. And it reminded me, you know, Old School had come out that previous spring, and Dust in the Wind is a huge song within that. I honestly think that like the whole Dust in the Wind thing was just like an excuse for Trey to throw out Old School quotes, which is just oddly humorous in 2003 and basically like in line with the larger humor of Makisupa throughout the years. But yeah, that 8809 version, that rock and roll is stunning. And I kind of just put the Makisupa here for two reasons. One, Trey and Mike trade instruments, which is, you know, cute and fun. But I just implore anyone who's listening to this or anyone who's here hanging out, please, please go and listen to the 8809 rock and roll. It is a stunning jam. And it's shocking to me that they could jam that well at that point. And yet 2009, 2010 is relatively light overall from a jamming standpoint. There are some great jams throughout 2009, but that jam is just like fully connected and just incredible. Mm-hmm. Also want to just throw out to anyone who's hanging with us here, give us your favorite versions of Makisupa Policeman that you've either attended, you know, seen live or heard. We're going to share our three favorite versions here once we get through this larger list, but we will shout out your favorite versions as well. Looking ahead, we have three versions that kind of came in essentially consecutive years. 1026, 2010, which came out of Night Nurse in a very celebrated show at the time, a show that was Dinner and a Movied in April of 2021, just about a year ago. Really beautiful rendition of Night Nurse, and then they play Makisupa, which feels like a tip of the hat, but also kind of feels like something you couldn't do in 2022. 528, 2011 from Bethel, which is one of my favorite 3.0 shows, like early, especially like pre Fuck Your Face show. Like this show has everything. It's got jams in really unique places. It's got an amazing set list. It's got one of the best number lines you'll ever hear. And then it's got this Makisupa that kind of leans into what we were talking about a song that can become a joke, or a joke that can spread beyond just that performance to either the rest of the show, the rest of the run. In this case, it becomes a joke for the entire tour because Trey starts singing about going and visiting each other's houses. And at one point they get to Paige's house, and Paige just like, he like stands up, gets into the clav, and is like, "This is my fucking house," and like plays this just like ridiculous riff, and the whole place is going crazy. Mike's on the envelope filter. Like it's amazing, amazing stuff. And then they end that performance of Makisupa with "This is what it sounds like at Fish's house." And it's a great segue right into the first drum riff of Harry Hood. It's just amazing set listing, great energy, great humor. But that joke, Mike's house, Paige's house, so on and so forth, would carry over through the entire June run through Father's Day of the 2011 tour. And then finally from this tier, 11-1-13, the night after they play Wingsuit, this is the famous Kush Bush version of Makisupa Policeman. What are kind of your larger thoughts about these three takes on the song?
So I was at the final two of these. I was at the Bethel and 11/1/13 shows. And I think in other circumstances, if those had been like the only things that happened at those shows, the only notable things, then I would kind of be like, okay, that was cool. But I think in the context of shows that had like lots of great jamming, lots of, you know, interesting song selections and just a great general vibe, it just heightens everything. It really gives you like a slogan. I mean, it's something that you can actually put on a t-shirt and that somebody probably has. And that's one of the really fun things about Phish shows. 2610 too. I don't know. It was, I remember it was, within a day or two of when Gregory Isaacs had died. So it was in tribute. And, yeah, I mean, I think it was just a really flawless segue. And I personally really like it. I thought it was, you know, a cool little segment.
That show, 1026 2010, is such an interesting show in the sense that, like, when it happened in fall 2010, it kind of elevated where that tour was at that point in time. And it felt like this combination of, there's a lot of songs played in that show, but most of those songs that were played, especially in the first set, are quite rare. And then the second set has some moderately interesting jamming. There's a really good version of Light towards the end of the second set. But I remember when they dinner and movied it last year, there was a lot of, I don't want to say hate, but there was a lot of like, why are they dinner moving this show from kind of the internet? And it just kind of is, it's a reflection of, like, I want to continue talking about 09 and 10 on this podcast, because those 2 years were so formative in terms of where Phish is at now. And I think you and I have talked about this a lot, like the challenges that the band had to grow and get back to where they eventually would get to on, I think, you know, we could roughly state August 31st, 2012 as kind of like the, now we're in a new era of Phish type of moment. You know, I think like listening to a show like this and like listening to a version of Makasupa like this, you just hear the band starting to tinker a little bit more and starting to move a little bit more sideways away from, you know, what is normal within a rock show. And shows like that really kind of showcased it, like this immediate evolution that they were going under.
Mm-hmm.
All of this brings us actually, one quick thing I want to say about the 11/1/13 version is there's such a great moment that, like, it's kind of what I was saying at the start of this, that, you know, the thing I love about Makasupa is that it really showcases a band that's willing to fall flat on their face and tell a joke that doesn't necessarily land, that you wouldn't hear most other rock bands playing in venues like them, you know, do without any sort of rehearsal. And there's a point where Trey asked Fishman, Kushbush, why that sounds like, you know, the name of a fantastic British band or your favorite British band. And Fishman just like doesn't pick up on it. And he's like, well, what band is that?
Right.
And and Trey then, you know, tells him it's Bush, and Fishman, oh yeah, I'm going to pick up on the joke. And, well, do you know any songs by Bush? And they segue back into Makasupa Policeman. But it's just such a great moment of like the two of them riffing as though there's nobody in front of them.
Yeah.
And yet they're just going to keep going with it because why not?
It's something that you would expect them to do when they're playing on a ranch with 100 of their friends in 1987. Right. And they're, you know, now in their, I guess at that point, like pushing 50 and in front of thousands and thousands of people. And it's, nothing's changed.
Yeah. And that show 11/1/13, it's one of my favorite shows of 3.0. I feel in a sense like such a weight was lifted off of them following performing Wingsuit the night before.
Absolutely.
And playing a song like Makasupa and just like kind of joking around, following as well, like an incredible version of Twist to kick off that second set. You just heard the band kind of like exhale and be like, okay, now that's over with. We're going to have some fun again. Mm-hmm. So we have two more notable versions that have come from late 3.0 as well as early 4.0. The first of which is 12/29/16. which I say this is the rare time in 2016 where the Marimba Lumina and a drums jam was a good thing, because it's actually a really interesting version that I had completely forgotten about, even though I was at this show. And then 10-26, 2021 from Santa Barbara, which just to showcase how absolutely insane fall tour 2021 was, this emerges from a 20-minute show opening, Pebbles and Marbles, and features the first Little Squirrel teases of the week. And I believe the first Little Squirrel teases in Phish history. What is Little Squirrel teases? Well, Ben, hello.
Hi.
How are you?
Fine.
We hope you have a good time.
Thanks.
I've always wanted to do that, so thanks for playing along. That joke.
I remember exactly what I'm supposed to say.
You did a good job. You had
these. We're jamming here.
We're jamming here. This is good. That emerges in the Makisupa Policeman and then carries over throughout the Vegas run. I think the last time that they teased that was 10:30 during the Animals show. And I remember at the time it kind of hinted to a lot of people that they were going to play the White Tape, or they were going to play The Man Who Stepped Into Yesterday, AKA Gamehenge, because they were going back in time and showcasing this, historical aspect of who Phish was. We all know that Phish never operates that way, which is why they gave us Sci-Fi Soldiers instead. But 12/29/16, 10/26/2021. What are your thoughts on these?
Yeah, no, I pretty much agree with everything that you're saying. I mean, the 12/29/16 version, I totally forgot about it too. And it's like, it's one of those times where it's like, okay, I'm kind of feel like I'm at a drum circle, but it's a really good drum circle. I mean, the 10/26 version, it's weird. I think that's like kind of an odd show, because the Pebbles that open the show is like this huge Pebbles, maybe one of the best Pebbles and Marbles ever. And then the rest of the show is good, but in my opinion anyway, is not quite at the top tier of fall 2021 shows. So I remember at the time, being a little bit disappointed that Sample in a Jar came out of Makisupa, though I think Sample in a Jar was a bit extended.
Trey sings in a higher register, excuse me, and jams it. It segues into the Silver Light, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna double check that. Yeah, into the Silver Light. It's a really interesting first set. It does not live up to overall what we heard throughout fall 2021, but I think it's an interesting show where there's enough thrown in there. Makisupa tossing back to the Little Squirrel adds just a lot to the set from the start, not to mention this 20 minute Pebbles and Marbles.
Right. But yeah, once again, Makisupa just providing fodder that they ride for many shows afterwards.
Yeah. And that idea of like a joke that lasts is, we've said this in a number of different ways, but like, it's one of my favorite things about Phish is like when they find a good joke, and this is not like a dad aspect of Phish. This like goes back to the 1980s. When they find a good joke, they just lay into it almost to the point that it's not funny anymore, but we're still going to keep telling it. And Makisupa is kind of like the perfect vehicle for that. And I'm, as someone who finds things funny and then like lingers on them for weeks on end and long after anyone I know stops thinking that's funny, it just like, I don't know, something like Makisupa, if you don't love this, you're probably not going to love Phish. And if you do love this and you can't appreciate it, it's probably a reason why you love Phish.
Yeah, no, I remember seeing Bethel in 2011 and then seeing them again like 2 weeks later or something, and they were still telling the same joke, and I couldn't even remember where or in what context they had started saying this whole Pages House thing, and I was like, what is, how are you still doing this? But yeah, that thing of like, I'm gonna say something that's funny and then I'm gonna keep saying it till it's annoying, and then I'll keep saying it until it's funny again.
Well, it's kind of like the weight joke. Have you ever heard that?
Yeah.
Like they would do this in front of new crowds where they'd play like the start to a song but they play it kind of wrong and then just go, wait. And they do it again. Wait, you know, as if like you're this like shy lead singer who's playing your first show and you like, you've practiced this riff and this song over and over and over again. And then you get in front of the crowd. You're like, wait, hold on. I can get it this time. And then playing that joke on themselves and their fans, but like doing it 8 to 10 times to the point where it's like, okay, we paid to see you guys play music. Like, what are you actually doing here?
Mm-hmm.
I love that stuff. And you get that with Makisupa.
Yeah.
So we've got scrolling across the bottom here in case, people out there joined late or you want to write down our essential versions. We've got like 14 essential versions, 10 or 14. I don't know exactly. It's somewhere in the middle there of Makisupa Policeman. And we recommend you checking all of these out from the spacious jams of 87, 97 to the humor and the fodder for jokes for far longer than they should be jokes. This, of course, would not be a Phish podcast without some more reductive ranking. So we wanted to present to you our favorite versions of Makisupa and why. And we've kind of gone deep on these, but you know, we'll just expand a little bit. Ben, what are your three favorite versions of Makisupa Policeman and why?
So I should preface this by saying it could change from listen to listen, but I chose 821 to 87 because it's just got a lot packed in there, some warts and some beauty marks or something, and some really nice improvisation. 11/19/97, I would say, is my all-time number one. That's just a Makisupa unlike any other. And it has to be heard, and it's on Live Phish. You can hear it as the filler for the 11/17/97 show. It's an Easter egg there at the end. And then 11/1/13, the one we were just talking about from Atlantic City, which was just, you know, kind of an all-time one of the most fun versions. And like, I don't know, it's just Phish at their silliest, their silly best. So those are my three. What about you?
Those are all great versions. And yeah, that 11/19/97 version, I still remember getting that Live Phish. And I think I'd heard one 97 show before I got that CD. I remember getting into Phish and being told that they went through this like funk reinvention and being like, what? Like this band? Like, what are you talking about? And I got 7/21/97, which is, you know, that was a dinner and a movie that's now officially released. It's a really good show. But 11/17/97, every time I went on to Phish.net, I was just like, I would just like look at that set list and be like, what the hell? Like, how did this get played? And I remember when that was released, taking it home, listening to it on my parents' side porch and just like having my mind blown. And then the show ends and that 28-minute Wolfman starts and it goes into Makisupa. And I've heard now other Makisupas, but like, I'm pretty used to Makisupa being a 3-minute joke song. And it's 10 minutes of just like space, and it's incredible. It's that other side of Fall 97. It's the non-funk, it's the ambient, spacious side that is personally my favorite side of the tour. So I went with 8/29/87. We were talking about this. This is from the Ranch in South Burlington, Vermont. This is a show. We talked about this extensively in Undermine Season 1. There's an incredible, incredible version of David Bowie. But the Makisupa, I definitely recommend. This is a 3-set show. One of my absolute favorite 80s shows of all time. I think that it deserves an official release. Cannot recommend this enough. The solo that Trey plays during this Makisupa will kind of like break your heart. It's so beautiful, and it's such a preview of where his guitar is going to go over the next 3 decades. 7/25/97, I talked extensively about this a couple minutes ago. Bathtub Gin, Makisupa, Ace DC Bag. It ends the first set. Like, these three songs end the first set, which if there's anything you ever need to explain why 1997 is incredible, it's because things like that happened. And then 5/28/11. I want to throw a 3.0 version in here. I think similar to your 11/1/13 version, like the humor that comes out of this and the band's I think something happened, you know, without humor, there's no Phish. Like, Phish would never have been a band that could have existed just as like a dead serious dedication to craft and to image. Like, there always had to be this sense of like, we don't take ourselves seriously, but we take the music seriously. And when they came back in 09, before they rediscovered jamming on a level they're playing now, and before they wrote a bunch of new songs, it was their humor that really was there to like remind them from the stage and remind us in the crowd, like, hey, we're still the same guys. We're figuring this out again. And moments like 5/28/11 and 11/1/13 really kind of showcase that. So those are six versions that are our top tier of Makisupa Policeman. I thought more about ranking Makisupa Policeman in the last week and a half than I ever thought was possible. But I got to say, like many things on this show, I dive in thinking, man, I'm going to talk about a jokey weed song on 420 by the rock band Phish. And I'm going to come out of it with a ton of new appreciation for the music. I mean, how about you? You feel similar?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I think there's both more and exactly as much to Makisupa as you expect there to be. Like, there's such a history to it. And so there is so much to discover. And yet when you get right down to it, it's like, it's barely a song. There's like two lines in it and two chords and that's all you get. But you know, it's launched 1,000 jokes and jams and stories and, you know, bits of Phish lore.
It's a really good way to put it. And like, you know, how lucky we are to have a band where the lead singer misheard the title of the song that his best friend wrote when he was in elementary school, and they decided to create a song out of it. And it's led to so many jokes, so many jams, and some very unexpected evolution along with the band's history. It's kind of crazy. The other thing I didn't mention earlier in the show, just as like an aside, the first version that was played in 3.0, 6609, did not have a keyword. It's, I think, the only version of Makisupa that did not have a keyword. And then it was the next version, 6/20/09, where Trey said, woke up this morning, pissed in your cup. Woke up in the afternoon, called my probation officer. And it was like, that was a great, hey, we can poke fun at our past. We can poke fun at who we are. And this is a song that we can do it with. So really great stuff. Ben, anything else that you have to say about Makisupa Policeman? I mean, we're an hour and 15 minutes into this show where I think you've said more than you ever thought you would about Makisupa, but you know, that's the nature of this.
Yeah. Well, you know, Makisupa's story is still being written, and I would not be at all surprised if it gets a new chapter tonight, but we'll find out soon.
I was going to say, do you think that they're going to play it tonight?
I think that they're, I would say 75% yes, but 25% Phish always keeps us guessing. So maybe not.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of our attendees here today, Alex May, who is a future guest on HF Pod Live, said he was at the last 420 show, 420/94 with Dave Matthews Band. So clearly we had Dave Matthews earlier this year. Clearly we are going to get Makisupa on 420 because we just have to celebrate. Do you think that they're going to allow people to indulge in marijuana inside of the garden today, knowing that it's the holiday?
Yeah, no, probably not. I would assume anybody who does that will be instantly removed.
Yeah, I would. That tends to be the vibe. Well, we'll see. You know, hopefully they take it a little bit looser, knowing that this is a big day in Phish history. I am very excited for this upcoming concert as well as this upcoming run. I wish I could be in New York with everyone who is there, but I want to thank you all for hanging with us here. And Ben, it's always a pleasure to talk Phish with you. It's always a pleasure to talk anything with you, but I really enjoyed this. Thank you for going down this journey and this crazy rabbit hole with me, and enjoy Taper's Choice tonight. It should be an awesome show.
Yeah, no, thanks for having me. And it's always good talking to you too. And I will look forward to listening to you talk about fish for the next few days.
It's going to be a lot of it. Yeah. Have a great night, my man. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. That was super fun. Thank you once again, Ben Greenfield at Guy Forget OPT. Throw the guy a follow on Twitter if you don't already. He is, like I said, a wonderful mind about the world of fish, as well as many other things. So as Ben mentioned, we are going to be, and as I said at the top here, we are going to be back a ton over the next couple of days. Tomorrow, we will be back at 1 p.m. Eastern to break down night one of Fish's MSG run. We have a great lineup tomorrow. We have Ryan Storm, friend of the pod, previous guest on HF Pod Live, host of his own great show. We move through stormy weather, talks a ton about fish and goose. Really, really, really great dude that I'm excited to hear his thoughts on the show. I think this is his first time at MSG, which I'm really, really stoked for him to experience that, as well as we're going to have Tim, Kevin, and Travis from the Wook Plus crew on. So it's going to be a packed show tomorrow, talking through the first night at MSG. Again, 1 p.m. Eastern, we'll be back every single day following Fish's MSG run to break down those shows. Before we go, I want to tell you just once again about two of our sponsors, Sunset Lake CBD. They are a majority employee-owned hemp farm located just outside of Burlington, Vermont. For years, Sunset Lake was a dairy farm. They produced milk for Ben & Jerry's ice cream. And in 2019, they diversified and started growing hemp for CBD. Sunset Lake CBD embraces Vermont's tradition for land stewardship by using sustainable and regenerative farming techniques. To build and protect healthy soils, they are 100% pesticide-free, use minimal tillage, and implement cover crops and crop rotations. They also serve as a research farm for the University of Vermont's agronomists to study hemp and inform best industry practices. I've said this many times, but like I love the products of Sunset Lake. But what I really love about Sunset Lake is the the incredible way that they treat their employees, the incredible way that they treat the land, the high-mindedness, environmental friendly approach to the product that they get to you all. So not only are they providing you with fantastic CBD, but they are also just doing, you know, great by the people that work for them and great by the area that they exist in. So check them out today at sunsetlakecbd.com. Use coupon code HFPOD for 20% off all products. Sunset Lake CBD, farmer owned, Vermont grown. We are also thrilled to be sponsored by Cash or Trade. It's the only secondary ticketing marketplace where fans buy, sell, and trade tickets at face value. What a concept. What an incredible thing. Fans are able to DM each other before, during, and after transactions. They can rate and review each other when a transaction is complete to let people know that you had a great experience with someone you were buying or selling tickets with, or a poor experience to give future purchasers the opportunity to understand, hey, I'm working with a trusted source here. There's no added fees to sell your tickets. All sales are fully protected by Cash or Trade's Trader Protection Policy, which guarantees your money back. Users can avoid purchase fees with a gold membership subscription. I'm a gold member there. I highly recommend getting it. It's a fantastic way for you to get tips off on when tickets that you are looking for are available, and also an opportunity for you to avoid any sort of purchase fees. Visit cashortrade.org to learn more, as well as to sign up. And with that, I will be back tomorrow at 1 p.m. Eastern to talk through fish at MSG, just like Ja intended it. Thanks, everyone. See y'all later.
Osiris.
Hey everyone, this is Tuck from Fit for a King, an off-road minivan. Every week I bring you fun interviews alongside your favorite metalcore entertainers with my new podcast, Get Tucked. Join me every Monday with bands like Counterparts, Crystal Lake, like Moths to Flames, and many more. We play unsigned and undiscovered bands, deep dive into each artist's history, and of course provide the greatest breakdowns in current metalcore. Tune in to Get Tucked every Monday, out now through Sound Talent Media.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.